Oxfam has been a strong and public supporter of UN peacekeeping force MONUC here, and we do not want to be misunderstood that we would like MONUC to withdraw from Congo. Quite to the contrary, without MONUC, Congo would be in a much, much worse shape. But MONUC has a very vast mandate, first and foremost, to protect the civilian population, to do patrols in the communities, and to provide them with a sense of protection. So we would like to see a strong, robust MONUC taking very seriously this protection mandate. What we do not believe is going to be successful is what's happening now, that the same MONUC that's supposed to protect civilians is supporting the army in an offensive. Tomorrow, the contact group meeting for Congo starts in Washington. We believe now with the meeting in Washington, it's the moment to analyze what has worked and what has not worked, to suspend these operations for the benefit of the civilian population and to find new and better strategies.
What do you hope will likely come out of the meeting in Washington by the contact group?
It's now 10 years after the beginning of the MONUC mandate. It is also a critical moment in the history of Congo now that these military operations against the FDLR militia group is going on. And we believe this is a crucial moment to put civilians first in the center of the discussions. And this year, unfortunately, the civilians, the women and the children, have once again borne the brunt of the conflict that has flared up again here in eastern Congo. Thousands of houses have been burned down. About 1,000 civilians have been killed. According to UN figures, about 900,000 people have fled their homes. Rapes are reported at about 7,000 this year alone. These are all unacceptable costs of what is now a purely military approach to tackling the FDLR, and we would suggest to suspend to have a more comprehensive approach.
Some 20,000 UN troops make up the MONUC contingent. What would dismantling this force do to the image of the United Nations and its effectiveness in other trouble spots around the world?
There's no question about dismantling the UN force. We at Oxfam would be vehemently opposed to withdrawing MONUC from Congo. MONUC plays an absolutely vital role in stabilizing eastern Congo, and MONUC is still needed also for years to come. A withdrawal of MONUC would simply be a disaster for the women, the children, and the men, as long as the government does not have yet full authority over its territory. What we would not like to see is a continuation of these offensive military operations with the support of MONUC for the simple reason that it has not worked and it has had an unacceptable price for the civilians.
How can MONUC better protect civilians in the midst of this government offensive in eastern Congo?
Well, it's first and foremost the responsibility of the Congolese government to protect civilians, and one of the key steps there is to end the impunity that is widespread, that is generalized here in Congo. A soldier who rapes a woman is not afraid of ever being persecuted for that crime. And that is a scandal that has to stop. And if some elements of the government forces are committing these abuses just as much as the rebel forces. So what is needed really is a comprehensive reform of the security services of the Congolese army, the police, and all the other associated elements, also the military justice, but also the civilian justice, to end this impunity. And the international community that is assembled in Washington, the key donors, can play a major role for a long-term comprehensive security sector reform. We think that should be the big priority. Now, in the short term, as long as Congo does not have yet a fully disciplined army, it's really the UN peacekeepers, really MONUC, that's the hope of the civilian population here in eastern Congo. So we feel MONUC should reprioritize this protection mandate and should do everything it can to reinforce the protection mandate. MONUC needs more resources for that. MONUC needs more civilian protection staff, more disarmament specialists, because MONUC needs to have the appropriate resources. But at the same time, a political decision in the capital has been taken that MONUC supports the current military offensive of the Congolese army. what I've just been saying is, of course, not conducive to the protection of the civilian population as long as a newly disciplined army is engaged in offensive operations and behind is the UN force supporting them. There can be no end to impunity if there is war.
Do you believe that there is a danger with the statement by 84 human rights groups that too many civilians are dying under the current situation? Do you think that there will be calls for the United Nations to pull out its presence in Congo altogether?
We definitely do not hope that there are calls for the UN peacekeeping force to withdraw from Congo. That would absolutely be the wrong step. The UN force, MONUC, is absolutely needed today in eastern Congo, first and foremost for the protection of the civilian population. And MONUC, to the contrary, needs more resources, needs more civilian personnel, more protection specialists, more disarmament specialists, more translators so that they can better interact with the population. What the coalition has asked for is that the present offensive military operations be suspended because they do cause a disproportional havoc for the civilian population. But the last thing we would want is a withdrawal of MONUC.
For how long should the operation be suspended?
The operation should be suspended in its present form for as long as needed to establish a more comprehensive and more long-term strategy for the resolution of the different causes of conflict in eastern Congo. Military pressure may very well be part of a future strategy, but it cannot be the only strategy as it is proclaimed now. What such a strategy should include is economic cooperation, is a consolidation of the diplomatic progress that has been made, of voluntary disarmament. There is a huge potential to disarm some of these militias voluntarily because they don't have necessarily something to do with the genocide in Rwanda 15 years ago. It is widely known that many of them, it's the second generation, they have been born in Congo. And for these people, alternative solutions should be envisaged, such as resettlement within Congo or resettlement to third countries. And then also the economic sources fueling these conflicts have to be cut off. There are leaders of the FDLR that are freely living in Europe and indeed in the United States, and action should be taken against those leaders abroad. There are also many people who deal with arms. The UN panels of experts has published a report mentioning to what degree there is still a large arms trade going on with Congo. And as long as these arms are available and as long as the root causes of the conflict, the question of livelihoods, the question of access to mineral resources, the question of community tensions, as long as these root causes are not resolved and weapons are available, the conflict is not going to come to an end.
With Oxfam's concern about human rights and the humanitarian consequences of the current military operation, has South Kivu improved enough that there are signs that the UN can get back to resettling the more than 900,000 displaced by the fighting?
No, the return of these 900,000 is not on the agenda so far. People are really caught in a vicious circle of violence where all of them are under suspicion by either the FDLR or the government forces or some of the other militias that are still roaming around eastern Congo. And people live in fear. Some of their houses were burned down. They may have been raped or abused on the road, and often they were also looted. The little goods they could take with them were taken away from them where they arrived. And also where the displaced people settle now, they don't really feel safe. As long as these offensive operations continue, the return of these people is simply not on the agenda.
The FDLR has been the main target of the DRC army behind a UN mission. What other targets are increasing collateral damage in the region?
It is really these offensives against the FDLR that has created a general sentiment of suspicion by all sides against the civilian population. The civilians are not really fleeing direct military confrontation. The conflict is relatively low intensity, what we are seeing right now. So civilians are fleeing these horrendous human rights abuses, the rapes, the lootings, the burning of houses, the killings. And why is this happening? It's because the civilians are suspected to collaborate with either or the other side ever since the beginning of these operations in January. So the civilians are caught between both sides and really have nowhere safe to go. At the moment, officially, there is no direct involvement of Uganda or Rwanda in the theater of operations in eastern Congo. At the moment, it is an operation that's being conducted by the Congolese army, by a relatively undisciplined army, a badly paid army, an army that doesn't have the proper food supply and that's largely living off the civilian population. In as far as the involvement of the neighboring countries, it's true that Rwanda and Uganda have intervened in the early phases, and in the case of the anti-FDLR operations, it was Rwanda. But right now, you know, what the links are, that's not really our job as an NGO to comment on that. What we're seeing in the field is unacceptable humanitarian consequences. We see the largest number of people displaced since many, many years in eastern Congo. At the moment when there was great hope and regional cooperation between the countries here in the Great Lakes region, between Rwanda and Congo and between Uganda and Congo is very, very important. That's an important condition for sustainable peace in the region. What we have been seeing so far is this cooperation materializing in a purely military way, and that's not working. At least it's not working for the civilians in the field. We've been conducting a survey amongst the 570 civilians in the affected areas of the FDLR operations, and more than 80% have told us that they are worse off now than before the operations began. And very few of them supported these offensive military operations.
Sexual violence has grown even more brutal. And given the recent push by the State Department and the UN General Assembly, what changes do you think need to be made to focus on the growing number of incidents of sexual violence in the DRC?
Yeah, sexual violence is absolutely atrocious here in eastern Congo, and we have not thought that it could get any worse, but it has gotten worse. We hear stories of very, very brutal rapes that I cannot even start to describe to you against women, against girls, but also against men. And the long-term solution to this is to put an end to impunity. People who commit these abuses, whether they are members of illegal armed groups or members of the official governmental forces, they do not fear to be persecuted. They do not fear to be punished. Now, having said this, on the 4th of July, President Kabila of Congo made a very important statement declaring zero tolerance against any form of human rights abuses committed by his security forces. And we think that is a very significant statement that the international community should support the government of Congo in its policy of zero tolerance. A few people were arrested, even some commanders were arrested since that declaration, and Oxfam welcomed these steps. But overall, generally speaking, impunity still reigns, and a lot has to be done before people can have hope for justice.
Do you expect officials at this week's Washington meeting of the contact group to take up the question of sexual violence and give an even more urgent appeal for it to stop?
Absolutely. Also, the visit of Secretary of State Hillary Clinton recently has highlighted and given more attention to the problem of sexual violence. And I do believe this will be an important item on the agenda. Now, the question is, the symptoms of this violence are obviously the survivors, and the survivors need assistance. And many NGOs are trying to do everything they can, but what I hope will be talked about is the cause of this sexual violence, and the cause is impunity, and impunity has to stop.